I'll tell you why I'm for the passage of Measure 1 and recreational marijuana in just a few moments here, but I wanted to have a conversation because it was thrown at me left and right throughout the last few days. And it happened and started after Cara Mund now said she was going to be running as an independent here in Congress in North Dakota. Need 1,000 signatures. People are saying, that's it? You only need 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot? Somebody whom I've grown to respect and have had a lot of conversations with when it comes to what should be on a ballot and how to get it on a ballot is Dustin Gowerlow. He's a friend of the show. He has the North Dakota Watchdog Network, and he joins us right now. Dustin, how you been, man?
Oh, pretty good, Tyler. How about yourself?
Doing well. I'm not happy about how fast summer's winding down, but there's nothing that you or I or anyone can do about that. But
right.
that does mean we're inching closer to that November election, and over the last 2 weeks, it's a whole different landscape here in North Dakota as far as the energy and what people are going to be voting on. You know, you have a Supreme Court decision that I think injected a lot of energy to people who probably would have sat this one out. And now in the last 2 weeks, we've had two different individuals, both high profile, announced that they're running as independents for federal office. They only need 1,000 signatures. My question to you, is that enough? Is that too low of a threshold to get your name on a federal or on a November ballot?
Well, as somebody who had to go get 300 to run for Burleigh County Commission, you know, it does seem a little bit low. But, you know, I think that the question is whether or not it is something that is going to disrupt things. Does the low threshold actually cause problems? And to this point, it does not. Because there's not a lot of people with a significant amount of wherewithal to run as independent. And I think that if we get into the business of increasing the requirements, you know, all we're doing is making it more difficult for those who, you know, who believe that they have something to say to be able to say it.
Seeing where I'm at here, because you do say 300 votes is what you needed in Burleigh County, I think the threshold here in Cass is rather low as well. But it's almost, I mean, it's pretty dang close. You're talking about statewide races here. And I think about the threshold you need to surpass to get, say, an initiative measure, which I understand this is apples and oranges. But 1,000 signatures seems very low to me. This is something that you and I have typically been on the same page when it comes to protecting what can be placed on a ballot by any Joe Schmo out there. To me, this is something that if I'm out in the legislature, I'm starting to reevaluate when I get back in November or in January. And I'm afraid, now watch me play both sides of this here, that this is going to be the start of, well, you know, we critique this and then we start tinkering with other things.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I've been very consistent about leaving the signature counts on initiated measures and constitutional measures alone and on referrals. And, you know, ironically, you know, all of this goes back to the NPL days, the original NPL days, and when the NPL was chasing Republican nominations in the 20s and 30s. And, you know, they wanted to keep it easy so that if they got kicked off the ballot, they could have a chance to get right back on. You know, it's certainly worth looking at. You know, the 300 number is the maximum that any local or legislative candidate is required to get in any city or county in North Dakota. So that's kind of where that comes from. You know, I guess I'm not as hardcore on leaving it, but like you said, if it leads to a slippery slope of changing all the dynamics of signatures, then I would be against it.
Yeah, that's where I think I'll draw the line as well. As far as 1,000 signatures in of itself, I'm open to a conversation, at least, to maybe raising this bar. But, you know, it hasn't been abused up until, and this isn't an abuse either. I mean, people are well within the right to do this, and you're more on the right side of this political spectrum. You know, North Dakota Watchdog Network, more on the conservative side yourself. And you get your crystal ball out. You've been in these back rooms with the conversations of people on this side. This Rick Becker news probably applauded by some, but I'm sure lighting a fire of rage amongst other Republicans. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, that's what I'm hearing. And this was a surprise to me. I did not hear about this previously, which is a commentary on some other things, but, you know, it is kind of surprising that this is the direction that Rick has gone. But at the same time, I know that he's very committed to making it clear that our federal delegation is not as conservative as he thinks that they should be, and as he thinks that the North Dakotans expect them to be.
A personal question for you. You've got a decision to make between John Hoeven and Rick Becker. I'm assuming those are the two you're going to be placing your wagers on. I mean, do you back Rick Becker over John Hoeven?
The fact is that Rick Becker's name on the ballot isn't going to change the outcome one way or another. So it doesn't really matter. I think that if there was, $5 million to drop on the race all of a sudden, that might change things, but I don't think there is. So
this gamble by... Well, it's not necessarily a gamble. This approach by Rick Becker, he said, surprised you. Is it because, I mean, he seemed to have given people his word that he wasn't going to do this. And now here we are waking up.
That's why it surprised me. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'd said last week. Somebody in this very studio that asked a question after Cara Munn decided she was going to go this approach. They asked, do you think Rick's doing this? I said, well, he said he wasn't going to. And here we are. As far as the energy that... he brought in the convention. I mean, he came dang close to getting the endorsement out there. I mean, are you hearing that, and granted this news just broke earlier today, and I get it. You learned about it just as we all did by a press release here. Do you suspect that momentum is going to continue on the general election ballot? I mean, you don't think it'll pull enough away to disrupt anything. You still think the outcome is John Hoeven gets reelected. Does this really... bring to that next level, though, the tensions within that party that might be irreparable in the future?
I'm not sure. I mean, like I said, unless there's a big money bomb that I don't know about, it's probably not going to affect the outcome. It'll just shake up the numbers. It very well could accelerate the process for a certain contingent of conservatives who are and have been working within the Republican Party, in inspiring them to be willing to not put all their eggs in that basket. I've never been one to be a party liner, though I mostly associate with Republicans and because that's the party in charge and you want to try to make the party that you're associated with better, even if you don't necessarily agree with them. And so I think that in general, you've got to make that decision on your own. And for the people that are upset about the Republican Party, it's not a new phenomenon, and it's not going anywhere. And so, if there was a move to have a larger movement do such thing, that might have a greater effect. We'll see what happens down the road.
I just know that on my side of the aisle, on the Dem NPL, people always point to a race in particular that the tensions rose, and that there's more people. I don't find myself agreeing with that being the downfall of the Dem NPL from the high point that it once was. But they talk about just that infighting that happened on a race back in the day, that was the start of the end of it all. And there's people starting to echo that, I think, on the Republican side of it. I don't know if I agree with it, but it certainly has some intrigue to it when you have this high level of... And if you missed Rick Becker earlier today on KFGO, I'm sure that podcast's available. There is a very pointed accusations of John Hoeven just not being what he once was as far as a Republican. I'm curious, from your perspective, do you think that John Hoeven has kind of veered from where he once was?
I've used the line, and it's kind of a joke line, that John Hoeven's one of the few people that went to Washington, D.C. and got better from a conservative standpoint. I was one of John Hoeven's loudest critics when he was governor. And as far as I can tell, he has actually moved to the right since he went to D.C. So, what he once was, in my mind, when he was governor, he was far more liberal on the spending side here than he has been at the national level. Now, whether that translates into votes is another story, because, you know, he's got to follow Mitch McConnell and the party leadership if he wants to continue to rise through the ranks. You know, and he's not necessarily as independent as Kevin Cramer is as when it comes to that sort of thing. But, you know, in my mind, John Hoeven was never really a big conservative to begin with. So comparing him to what he once was, you know, that's I don't know. I can't really say that is the case. I mean, it he's not as conservative as he sells himself off to be, but I don't know that there are very many people that are.
I find that explanation more accurate than what I've been hearing. I think the variable here is the fact that there's people within the Republican Party that have moved even further and further to the right, and that's what they draw their line in the sand. So I don't think your assessment's wrong at all. I think that's just the outlier here is we got the Republican Party itself. They're moving further to the right than what John Hoeven has, as he's been out in the U.S. Senate as well. Dustin, what I missed, this is one of those, okay, well, now this really stirred things up, but you're following this. What else have you been working on at the ND Watchdog Network?
Well, we've been keeping an eye on the email and open record situation with the AG's office, mainly because we were chasing down a request regarding the legacy fund, and it took quite a while for us to get any response from the AG's office, and I resubmitted that and basically was told that we have to go about getting the answer a different way as far as learning about where the money that is going to the consultants that tell our investment board where to put the legacy fund dollars. Trying to get a better handle on that contract. Some of it has been redacted and exempted from open records, and we've been trying to chase down how long that exemption is valid for and whether or not we can ever find out really what's in the entire contract. So those are the sort of things that I've been working on lately. It's been a fairly quiet summer overall.
Well, and that all changed over the last 2 weeks. I want to follow up just real quickly before I let you go here. You mentioned that was it an open record request to the Attorney General?
Yeah, we filed a joint request with the reporter out of KX News here in Bismarck, asking for some guidance on whether an exemption to open records was permanent on a contract document regarding the consultant. And we didn't get a response until I sent in a follow-up because, you know, there's been some emails that have been deleted or otherwise gone missing over the last few months. And I thought maybe our original request was one of them. And we did get a follow-up. We've got to continue pursuing that because there seems to be a problem with whether or not a contract with a private consultant is permanently, or if portions of a contract can be permanently exempt from open records. And this may be an area that we have to dig into next session as far as the open records language. But I think that there's going to be a lot of changes in that department next session.
Yep. And well, and I think as there should be. And Dustin, I'm running up against the clock. I just want to say this while you're on here. The reason I followed up with that is because we were told when those records were deleted, or once we found out that there was no open records that were pending, no requests pending, and then they were saying, well, there's not much, and then we find out Susan Balla, their attorneys had put a hold on all that. Now, this is the second time in about 2 weeks that we heard the argument that they said, well, there's nothing wrong here. I'm led to believe that they weren't being exactly honest with that, or they weren't aware of some of this, which is even more frustrating there, Dustin. I got to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. We had one end that was not responded to, sure.
All right. Well, that got my mind racing here, and I'll be sharing some of that, but I got to let you go, man. It's always a pleasure to visit. We'll chat again soon. Dustin Garvalo with North Dakota Watchdog Network. Boy, there's a lot to unpack there. I will do so in just a moment, and plus I will answer you why I am for passing Measure 1. I'm Tyler Axis. You got locked into KFGO Fargo.